Hello, and welcome to Page Turn, the Largo Public Library podcast. I'm your host, Hannah. Page Turn is a monthly podcast bringing you information about great books, library news, and fun library tidbits from your favorite programs, as well as a Spanish language book review from Victor. But as always, we start with Reader's Advisory. Combat veteran Peter Ash leaves a simple life rebuilding hiking trails in Oregon to help his good friend Henry Nygaard, whose daughter runs a Denver security company that protects cash-rich cannabis entrepreneurs from modern-day highwaymen. Henry's son-in-law and the company's operations manager were carrying a large sum of client money when their vehicle vanished without a trace, leaving Henry's daughter and her company vulnerable. Then, when Peter is riding shotgun on another cash run, the cargo he's guarding comes under attack from hijackers, and he narrowly escapes with his life. As the incidents mount, he has to wonder, for criminals as sophisticated as these, is this money really worth the risk? And if not, what about his cargo is worth more? Today's Reader's Advisory is Lighted Up by Nicholas Petrie. Lighted Up is the third in the Peter Ash thriller series. The tone is fast-paced and action-packed. The writing is gritty and compelling. The series deals with PTSD, veterans, and journalists. Readers may also enjoy Nothing Short of Dying by Eric Story. 16 years. That's how long Clyde Barr has been away from Colorado's thick forests, alpine deserts, and craggy peaks, running from a past filled with haunting memories. But now he's back, having roamed across three continents as a hunter, adventurer, soldier of fortune, and most recently, unjustly imprisoned convict. But once again, his past is reaching out to claim him. By the light of a flickering campfire, Clyde received a frantic phone call for help from Jen, the youngest of his three older sisters. Then, the line goes dead. Clyde doesn't know how much time he has. He doesn't know where Jen is located. He doesn't even know who has her. All he knows is that nothing short of dying will stop him from saving her. Tagging along with Clyde on this strange, desperate, against all odds rescue mission is a young woman named Allie, whose motivations for hurtling into harm's way are fascinatingly complex. As the duo races against the clock, it is Allie who gets Clyde to see what he has become and what he can be. Or Deception Cove by Owen Lukanen. Former U.S. Marine Jess Winslow re-enters civilian life a new widow, with little more to her name than a falling down house, a medical discharge for PTSD, and a loyal dog named Lucy. The only thing she actually cares about is that dog. A black and white pit bull mix who helps her cope with the devastating memories of her time in Afghanistan. After 15 years, nearly half his life, in state prison, Mason Burke owns one set of clothes, a wallet, and a photo of Lucy, the service dog he trained while behind bars. Seeking a fresh start, he sets out for Deception Cove, Washington, where the dog now lives. As soon as Mason knocks on Jess's door, he finds himself in the middle of a standoff between the widow and the deputy county sheriff. When Jess's late husband piloted his final fishing expedition, he stole and stashed a valuable package from his drug dealer associates. Now the package is gone, and the sheriff's department has seized Jess's dearest possession, her dog. Unless Jess turns over the missing goods, Lucy will be destroyed. The last thing Mason wants is to be dragged back into the criminal world. The last thing Jess wants is to trust a stranger. But neither of them can leave a friend, the only good thing in either of their lives, in danger. To rescue Lucy, they'll have to forge an uneasy alliance. And to avoid becoming collateral damage in someone else's private war, they have to fight back and find a way to conquer their doubts and fears. Or Fox Hunter by Zoe Sharp. Charlie Fox will never forget the men who put a brutal end to her military career, but she vowed a long time ago she would not go looking for them. Now, she doesn't have a choice. Her boss and former lover, Sean Meyer, is missing in Iraq, where one of those men was working as a private security contractor. When the man's butchered body is discovered, Charlie fears that Sean may be pursuing a twisted vendetta on her behalf. Sean's partner in their exclusive New York close protection agency needs this dealt with, fast and quiet, before everything they've worked for is in ruins. He sends Charlie to the Middle East with very specific instructions. Find Sean Meyer and stop him by whatever means necessary. At one time, Charlie thought she knew Sean better than she knew herself, but it seems he's turned into a violent stranger. As the trail grows more bloody, Charlie realizes that unless she can get to Sean first, the hunter may soon become the hunted. Bonus segment. My personal favorite Goodreads list Light It Up is on is book series for men who like action. Happy reading, everyone! This month's library tidbit is on Juneteenth. For those that don't know, Juneteenth is a portmanteau of June and 19th, and is so named because it is a holiday celebrated in June on the 19th. Juneteenth has gone by a few different names: Freedom Day, Jubilee Day, Liberation Day, and Emancipation Day. It is the celebration of the emancipation of people who had been enslaved in the United States. Specifically, it is the celebration of the announcement that slavery had been outlawed in the United States and that all people who had been enslaved were free people, made in Texas by the Union Army General Gordon Granger on June 19, 1865. Now, for those of you who were taught U.S. history in schools, you may have noticed some weird discrepancies with the dates you were taught. After all, the Emancipation Proclamation was made on September 22, 1862, and on January 1, 1863, 3.5 million enslaved African Americans were free under the law in the United States of America. But with the American Civil War, the landmass that was considered the United States of America was constantly changing. The American Civil War officially ended on May 9, 1865. Who was still enslaving people in June of that year? Well, short answer is a lot of states. The medium answer is that news took time to travel. And the more complicated answer is that people were still being enslaved in Delaware and Kentucky up until the ratification of the 13th Amendment on December 6, 1865. And of course, the 13th Amendment still allows for the enslaving of people if they have been imprisoned, which is partially why we have such a bloated prison population. So once slavery was abolished by the Emancipation Proclamation, President Abraham Lincoln had the Union Army announcing this fact as they advanced during the Civil War. Texas being more remote than other slave states, the Union Army didn't focus on that state for most of the war. This meant that the enforcement of the new law was slow and inconsistent. However, on June 19, 1865, Union General Gordon Granger arrived in Galveston, Texas, and read out the proclamation at the Union headquarters at the Osterman Building, as well as a few other locations, including the Customs House, the Courthouse, and the now-named Reedy Chapel African Methodist Episcopal Church. The proclamation he read was, "The people of Texas are informed that, in accordance with a proclamation from the Executive of the United States, all slaves are free. This involves an absolute equality of personal rights and the rights of property between former masters and slaves, and the connection heretofore existing between them becomes that between employer and hired labor. The freedmen are advised to remain quietly at their present homes and work for wages. They are informed that they will not be allowed to collect at military posts and that they will not be supported in idleness either there or elsewhere." That proclamation starts out fairly strong. I personally do not enjoy the idea that they were expecting enslaved populations who had experienced immense abuse and trauma to stay and work for those who had abused and traumatized them. Especially as it took a series of legal cases in the Texas Supreme Court for formerly enslaved people to gain legal status as free people between 1868 and 1874. But it did abolish, mostly, slavery in Texas. Juneteenth started as a Texas holiday, with formerly enslaved Texans gathering on the anniversary of the proclamation to celebrate. The first few Juneteenths were referred to as Jubilee Day, a reference to the concept of Jubilee found in the Christian Bible. A concept that held that every 50 years all enslaved people received their freedom and all debts were wiped away. In the beginning, the celebrations were political rallies passing out information to formerly enslaved people on how to vote. With states passing segregation laws, cities began refusing black people from using public parks. So freed people pulled their money together and purchased their own plots of land to use for events such as Juneteenth. One such plot of land is now Houston's Emancipation Park. Black freed Texans came from all over the state to join together and celebrate Juneteenth. Partially because of Jim Crow era laws, Juneteenth celebrations began to decline. Other factors included people moving to urban areas and into jobs that did not allow them time off for celebration. However, after the Great Depression, the Texas State Fair, from 1936 to 1951, served as a destination for the revitalization of the celebration. In 1938, Texas Governor James V. Allred issued a proclamation naming June 19th Emancipation Day and a state holiday. In 1951, over 70,000 people came together to celebrate. This particular celebration was called the Juneteenth Jamboree. Between the 1940s and the 1970s, over 5 million black people left Texas and other areas of the South, called the Second Great Migration, for the North and West Coast, taking and spreading Juneteenth with them. Since the 1970s, Juneteenth celebrations have been steadily growing across the United States. While most states do recognize Juneteenth to varying degrees, Hawaii, North Dakota, and South Dakota do not. But there is growing pressure for it to be named a federal holiday. Modern celebrations include readings of the Emancipation Proclamation, singing traditional songs, reading works written by African American writers, also cookouts, family reunions, street fairs, music, rodeos, historical reenactments, barbecuing, baseball, fishing, and Miss Juneteenth contests. Last year, Juneteenth celebrations were kicked off in Largo with a bike ride on the Pinellas Trail, followed by a community fish fry, a staple of local Juneteenth celebrations. The city of Largo supports the Friends of the Ridgecrest celebration by donating fish for the fish fry, and in 2019, the bookmobile rolled up for the celebration as well. We hope everyone, but especially our African American patrons, has a very joyous Juneteenth. And now it's time for Book Traveler, with Victor.
Bienvenidos a Viajero de Libros. Soy Victor, un bibliotecario aquí en la Biblioteca Pública de Largo, y hoy les voy a estar hablando sobre un nuevo libro que se titula El Unicornio Negro, por Audre Lorde. Sinopsis. El Unicornio Negro, publicado en 1978, es un poemario que desde una gramática y genealogía propia busca explorar la pluralidad de identidades y las opresiones de una mujer afroamericana y lesbiana en los Estados Unidos en la década de los años 70, cuyos temas son tan variados y trascendentales que llegan hasta nuestros días intactos. Este libro, en edición bilingüe, es el primer poemario de Audre Lorde que se traduce al español. Opinión. Audre Lorde es una de las escritoras más importantes del feminismo afroamericano. Ella luchó por los derechos civiles, contra el racismo y la opresión de la mujer. Lorde ha forjado la forma de hablar y pensar de muchas personas, destacando el feminismo negro desde los años 70. Muchos de los versos en este poemario bilingüe son verdaderamente lemas del movimiento feminista. El Unicornio Negro usa la poesía para abordar temas de racismo, sexismo, violencia, erotismo lesbiano, la sororidad y la sonoridad. Lorde también pone énfasis a la autenticidad y la diversidad que va más allá de las fronteras simbólicas de los Estados Unidos. Estas fronteras simbólicas se ven representadas en uno de mis poemas favoritos del libro Salir Adelante, donde podemos ver cómo las personas están marcadas por sus diferencias socioeconómicas y la falta de recursos para poder salir adelante. Otro de mis poemas favoritos fue Poder. Este poema sigue siendo muy relevante hoy día y puedes sentir la ira de la autora al tratar el tema de un adolescente que fue asesinado por un policía y este fue luego declarado no culpable en el juicio. El libro toca temas muy importantes y queda muy recomendado. Es todo por hoy. Hasta la próxima edición de Viajero de Libros. Hasta luego.
Thanks, Victor, for another great book review. Remember, if you happen to not know Spanish, check out our English language translation in the show notes. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Check out our events calendar for our upcoming events. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again soon. Oh, shh. No, there's one. No. No fuzzies. No fuzzies on the line.